line like me again. I'm Phil Pard. Lauren Buntmeyer is our guest from some, I don't think we've had anybody from Kansas. Where are you in Kansas, sir?
Lawrence, Kansas.
Lawrence.
That's about right in between Topeka and Kansas City.
Did some famous bank robbery happen there or something? Why do I know about Lawrence, Kansas?
Lawrence is probably the slavery that I can't think of it. The Jayhawkers over Missouri and over here, and I can't think of the guy's name that raided the hotel and burnt half of it down and everything.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So that's obviously I've read that story somewhere. That's what's confusing me. What your level of vision? You totally blind or?
I'm totally blind now. I was born with pretty good vision. I was, I guess you could say, just on the mark of legally blind. And I had vision until I was about 23. As I got older, kept getting worse and worse, but I lost most of it by the time I was about 23.
But you were legally blind. You've been blind all your life,
yes,
basically.
I've been legally blind my whole life.
And by the time you were 23, you were almost totally.
I'm totally yes, totally blind.
Totally blind. And you, they were, you were a child. You were born in Kansas. Tell us about your early childhood, your early days.
Okay. Well, I was born in Nashville, and that's in Kansas, not Tennessee.
Nashville, Kansas.
Nashville, Kansas.
I had no idea.
I grew up in Cunningham, which is 60 miles west of Wichita, and Nashville is about 16 miles or so south of Cunningham. So it's very south central of Kansas. And so anyway, I grew up there, and I lived in Cunningham until I was about the seventh grade, and then we moved to Kansas City, and I was in public school for 6 years, and then I went to the Kansas School for the Blind in Kansas City. The next 6 years. And I wanted to ask you, before I forget it, did you mention all the time Texas School for the Blind.
Uh-huh.
Did you have an R.A. Hansen? Robert Hansen? He was at Kansas, and I think he came to Texas. I think
he came shortly after I left.
I think he came in the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay, I left in 58. They left me in 58. I know the name, but I know somebody that would know that went to school about that time. He was in Kansas at your school.
He used to be in Kansas. He used to teach government and that type thing. And, in fact, he was the person also through the summers. He would go around Kansas recruiting the blind and that type thing for the school for the blind. So, and he was the one that came out and talked with my parents. And of course, the public schools didn't know what to do with the partially sighted, totally blind bat. So
yeah.
They sent me up at School for the Blind, and I graduated from there in 63.
But now, this Mr. Hansen, I think, came down to be the superintendent of
I think he did. I think that's right.
I know the name, but I was long gone. I was out traveling the world when he came to school. So you graduated in 63.
I graduated in 63, yes.
So how was the Kansas school? We've had reports on all sorts of others. Did you dormitory life, I guess?
I had the dormitory life, and I was about a couple hundred miles away from home. And a couple hundred miles away from home for a couple of years, and then my parents moved back up to Kansas City. My dad got a job in Kansas City. But go home, usually once a month, no more than that. I had a hard time even talking them into that.
Yeah.
Most of the time it was just holidays or summertime, and that was it. But we used to go back and forth. So most of the time I was at school, dormitory life, the girls on one side, the boys on the other.
Mm, yeah.
And you had activities. It was a typical thing, you know. You got to see them for about 5 minutes with 20 faculty around, and that's about it, you know. And so
that seems to be the typical attitude of those. I don't know what the hell they were afraid we were going to procreate more little blind kids.
I guess so. And then they thought the blind couldn't make them, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was. That seems to be the pervading wisdom at all the blind schools. For God's sake, of course, you got to realize you got 200 blind kids and no parents around, so if one of the girls were to get pregnant, that could drastically affect the little picnic that they had going there at the school. I mean, they could,
right?
Somebody could actually come in and say, "All right, you folks should mean to." So I don't know. And,
yeah.
And there was a lot. It was a lot. Things were a lot different then. It was just a different attitude, a whole different world. It's not even the same. The same thing at all. Anyway.
Well, and the schools in the, I think the 50s and 60s were a lot better than they were way back in, you know, in the 20s and 30s. I mean, the stories I heard about the Kansas school way back in the 30s and 40s was horrible. I mean, just.
Yeah.
It was like sweatshops and stuff, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the Texas School for the Blind also, I guess. So I guess as they gave women the vote and people got more rights. Anyway, I'll check on this Mr. Hansen, because I'm pretty sure he was
there. Yeah, I'm really curious whatever happened to him. So
They'd gone through lots of changes after. The blind school began to change about 5 years after I left. I think much for the better. I left in 58, like in the early 60s, it began to liberalize some. Did you Braille reader, I guess?
Well, unfortunately, they didn't teach me Braille. I could read print. I was just right at
okay.
that line of legally blind.
Okay, so they didn't need to teach you Braille,
they
really.
Well, no, I wish they would have, but now, when I look at it.
Yeah, because you're totally blind now. So
I'm totally blind now, and I use a Braille, mainly grade one, and a few contractions, but mm-hmm. I'm a horrible Braille reader.
But you can use it to label things and
oh, yeah, I use it for names, addresses, phone numbers, the whole bit.
Yeah.
And I use a Braille writer and that type thing, but I'm very poor at reading Braille, so.
Well, we got talking books. We got talking books. You don't
right. need. And the good old computer. So.
And the wonderful old, the wonderful computer. In order to, you know, the greatest thing to happen to blind people in forever and ever is that.
That's right.
Is that doggone computer? So what were your interests in school? What were you thinking about? You might.
Well. When I got to school for the blind, I had a little bit of, I had piano tuning there, and I had just about all of the hands-on things that they taught at schools for the blind. And after I got out of school there, I went to the rehab center in Topeka, Kansas. And they ran me through all these tests, putting square pegs in round holes, and they decided that I should be an auto mechanic. And I was not interested in being an auto mechanic, even though I, through the years, had worked on the farm and knew how to fix combines and tractors and everything else. I just was not interested in that. I didn't like the dirty mess and didn't feel like smelling like gas all the time. And
yeah.
So I wanted to become a piano technician. I thought, you know, it's pretty good money in it. And so I told them I'd like to do that, and they said, well, no, we can't do that. So I said, well, okay. So I just left. And or walked out of the meeting we were having.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just worked my own way through school. And the next day they called me back in and said, well, we decided we're going to send you the Piano Technology Center in Vancouver, Washington. So I was out there for 2 years learning all about tuning, rebuilding, anything and everything about pianos.
But you had already learned that in school, no?
Well, just a little bit, not very much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you had a few minutes here every day, that type thing, or 2 or 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't really dedicated to it, you know. In fact, my teacher that I had, his report on me said I would never make a piano technician. So I guess I was a little bit too ornery or something.
But they were determined to make an auto mechanic out of you.
Yes. Yes, they wanted me to become an auto mechanic.
That's a kind of an unusual thing for. Did they do that because of your partial sight, you think, or not?
I guess so. I don't know. They just had this thing about auto mechanics back then. That was in '63.
They were going to make blind people auto mechanics. Of course, now a blind auto mechanic couldn't read the computer that would diagnose the car. You'd have to have adaptive
eyes
to.
That's right. It'd be pretty hard to do.
Adapt window eyes or jaws to read the computer, which I guess could probably be done, but that's, you know. That, back then, cars were, there was a lot of hands-on. There was a lot of, you know, you could, back then, when I was a kid, I could tell the different kind of cars by just listening to them. Just
oh,
hear
that's right. That's right.
On the street, you could, that's a Buick.
That's right.
You hear a car starting, that's a Dodge, no question. You know, you could
always hear a Chrysler when it was.
Oh, yeah, when they. So, you see, what this piano technique, this is in Vancouver? Is in where?
In Vancouver, Washington. It was called the Piano Hospital and Training Center back then. Now it's called the Piano Technology Center for the Blind.
Oh, they were all blind, other blind people there?
Yes, yes. It was mainly for the blind, and or it was for the blind. And then they started bringing in a few sighted, but they're pretty much leaning back towards strictly technology for the blind now.
Yeah.
So. And anyway, I left there, and I came to Kansas City, and I worked for the big Jenkins Music Company. They had about 11 stores, and I worked in their warehouse and tuning and all this stuff. Then I got a job at KU, at University of Kansas in the music department. I was a tuner over there. Then I left, and I went to, I was here a couple years, a year and a half or so, and then I went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And what on earth for?
I went to the Western Pennsylvania School for Blind, and I was going to teach all of these kids piano tuning.
Oh, you were going to be the piano tuning teacher.
That's
with
right.
The blind kids.
Right. Right. And that school, I was only there a year. I just absolutely could not get along with the administration. I didn't like their procedures for teaching the blind. Oh, they pretty much wanted to keep the blind in their hands and put them in the laundry or working for themselves or doing something. And I was for, you know, teaching them and getting them out and getting them jobs and this type of stuff. But so we had total disagreement. So I said, well, I better get out of here. So I came back to Kansas, started my own business, worked for Wurlitzer, worked for Jenkins, worked school system. Then I ended up coming back to KU again.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, I was a contractor for the state. I put contract work for the university. Mm-hmm. Then in 83, I became full. It was a full-time position, so I was there from 83 till just 3 years ago.
So you actually worked for the state for 17 years.
Yes.
And thank heavens, because you got that little state retirement. And
that little bit of retirement.
Yeah. I always want to go to work for the state if you can. But I imagine if an old boy worked hard at piano technology. We got a guy here in town that's just, I mean, this boy's got Glenn there and got more work. I mean, you have to call him in a couple weeks, he may get back to you. He's just got more work and he knows what to
right.
do with.
Oh, yeah. It's a good profession. It's, and I see, I had my own business along with KU, so I've always had my own business. Self-employed and working up there. And here 3 years ago, I just got tired of working two jobs. And I finally said, I'm just going to stick with my self-employment.
Yeah.
And I'm just basically sort of working half-time now and sort of enjoying a few other things.
Well, you're 60 years old plus around that. You're around 60, aren't
right,
you?
61, yeah.
61. So it's time to slow down a little bit and start to doing some other things. So you basically made a living as a piano tuner technician all your life.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And it's been good, you know. It's interesting. In fact, you hear people that say, oh, people don't even play pianos anymore. Or people,
they do.
They play piano. I mean, I think it's changing a little bit. You don't have maybe the numbers or the cheaper pianos are not being manufactured quite as much because they're going to electronic keyboards and stuff. But the higher quality pianos are selling better than ever.
Oh, there are lots of keyboards around, but there's still lots of people who play piano. I mean,
that's
lots
right.
Of,
that's right.
And you just can't get that exact piano sound that you can get out of a nice grand piano with a keyboard.
That's right. That's right.
It's I've heard some that came very close, but none that actually duplicated that sound. So there are plenty of pianos to tune if.
Just have to have the drive and. The desire to get that clientele and to work your business, and that's 90% of the battle right there.
There are hundreds, thousands of churches all over this country with Sunday school rooms that have each got a piano in that Sunday school room.
That's right.
When I got out of school, I went over to Park Memorial Church, which is the church that my parents went to, and made them a deal to tune all their pianos. And I had no idea how many It took me weeks. How many pianos they had, those old Sunday school pianos, would be half step flat and trying to pull them up. And, you know, rat had been in there. And, you know, it's just, but my God, they had way more, a lot more pianos than I thought they did. I didn't come out on that deal.
Well, see, at KU, I had 160 pianos at the university.
Yeah. So, and that's, once you tune the last one, it's time to go tune the first one again.
That's right. Start over again.
Yeah, that's what Glenn was telling me, that the college won't, at Nacogdoches, we have a four-year college at Nacogdoches, and they won't leave him alone because they can't find anybody else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's positions open all the time, you know. There's one open in Texas right now. They're looking for a technician. If there's anyone out there looking for a position in Austin,
maybe
one open.
Maybe there'll be somebody that listening that would that would enjoy that job. Let's take a break, and then we got some other things that you have gotten interested in. We want to talk about. You think we're through? We pretty well covered your life. Well, we have, but we have some other things that we want to discuss. Lauren Buttmeyer is our guest from Lawrence, Kansas. I'm Phil Parr, back with a little blind like me in just a second. You good?
Good.
All right.
About the blind handyman list, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list. And it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com.
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
From Lawrence, Kansas, is our guest, and I remember if I talked to you. You're a member for the people, aren't you?
Yes.
I don't remember if I saw you over there in a room, or if I think the first time I talked to you was on Marlena.
Yes,
Sunday night.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I heard your voice on there, and I'd been trying to send you emails, and finally we made contact. So.
Yeah, and you indicated then that you were interested or involved in solar technology.
Yes.
Which should be a major thing at this point in time, but because of big oil money is not.
That's right.
So tell us how you got involved with that.
Well, this was back, we built a house back in 79, and in Lawrence, Kansas. And this was back when Carter was president, and they were given lots of good tax breaks and everything for solar. And so we built a house, and we have solar panels on our roof. We have active solar and passive solar. We have a solar, we have a greenhouse on the south side of our house, and it's about 17 foot long, 8 foot out from the house, and stands two stories tall. And it's mainly glass, and the roof of it is at a 45 degree angle. The south side of the house, the whole roof is a 45 degree angle, in fact, and that's where the solar panels are. And they are have a silicone, liquid silicone in them. And our first basis for heating is, of course, is the passive solar. You just have a sliding glass door that we open into the greenhouse, and the heat just pours in when the sun shines. And then there's also a door in the basement area we can open up, and so it just creates a natural draft. The cooler air from the basement chases that heat right upstairs, and that's our first way. The second way is with using hot water that comes from a solar heated water tank, which is 1,500 gallons. And the panels on the roof, there are 24 of them. 20 of them are for heating the 1,500 gallon tank, and the other four are for heating an 80 gallon domestic hot water tank. And what happens is when the sun comes out, the silicone heats up, and the when the silicone is about 4 or 6 degrees warmer than the water in the tank, domestic and or heating tank, the pumps kick on, and the silicone comes from the roof down into the basement and goes into a heat exchanger. And at the same time, the water is being pumped from the tanks over to the heat exchanger, and the heat is then transferred from the hot silicone to the cold water. And it just keeps making this circle. When the domestic hot water bathing tank gets 80 degrees or 160 degrees, it shuts off. And it's unlimited on the other, but I've seen it at, of course, when it's a little bit have warm days outside, I've seen it up to 150 degrees, 60 degrees. But most of the time in the dead of winter, you'll see it 100, 110 degrees. And then what happens is at nighttime, sun goes down, you close up your greenhouse, and your thermostat's calling for heat, and so there's a like a car radiator in the air return. We have a regular forced air fan on the furnace, I'll say, and the air passes across this coil, and what's happened is the hot water from the tank comes over to this coil, radiator-type thing, and the heat is just transferred from the water to the air. And then the bathing, of course, is just the regular holding tank, 80-gallon tank, and when you get your bath, water comes from that tank.
All right. We, whether we'll get to explain this whole system or not, I don't know. Let's just start with this. What is, tell me this, the basic difference. I think I've already guessed, but the difference in the passive and an active solar solar system.
Passive is strictly air heating the air, like the air in the greenhouse. And the active is using the liquid silicone on the roof and heating water.
In other words, this silicone actually does something. It moves.
Yes, it actually is a liquid, and it circulates through the pipe. And the thing that's so neat about silicone is it doesn't freeze, or it does. It may be, I don't know what it is, way, way below zero.
But it isn't at 32 degrees.
No, huh? No, uh-huh.
Now, and so the greenhouse has solar panels on the roof.
Right.
And these solar panels take the sun and reflect it down into the greenhouse.
No. The solar panels, all they are is just a flat panel. And they have silicone in them, or probably little pipes or something. I'm not sure exactly how they do that up there. They're thinned, and they have this liquid silicone running through them, and then the sun just heats it up. And it'll get hot. I mean, you can't touch. When that silicone comes downstairs to the heat exchanger, you can't hold on to it. It'll burn you.
Okay, but you heat the greenhouse with passive heat?
Yes, that's just strictly the sun rays coming into a glass room. That's all that is.
Heating that room.
And also the heat from that just pours into the house.
That's what I'm saying. You open the door upstairs.
Right.
And the heat from that room pours into your house and keeps your house warm in the daytime.
That's right.
And then you open this door in the basement, which is a natural exchange.
Right. And also, where this door is opened into a like a great room, a living room area, this floor is brick. They're one and 5/8 inch thick pavers, they call them. And the room is like, it'd be like 24 by 24.
Okay.
And that's kitchen area, great room area, all that.
Yeah. Thing.
So that whole floor is brick. So this heat comes in there. And it'll heat up these bricks. And, in fact, I have a couple of ceiling fans, and I turn those ceiling fans on low and just push that heat right down against those bricks. And so, you know, that's a lot of heat you're maintaining or building up into those bricks through the night.
And once you do that, then those bricks stay warm and help heat the great room.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And usually a lot of times I'll leave my regular circulating fan on the furnace, I just leave it on, and that just sort of levels out the whole house.
Okay, so it's nightfall, and December, January, whatever, and it's time to close off the greenhouse doors.
That's right.
And then we start using this hot water just stop me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
It's the hot water. The silicone has heated this hot water in the day in this little radiator that's in your forced air exchanger then, and you just like a normal, you just blow air across those coils to heat your house at night.
Right, but the water comes from a 1,500-gallon tank, and that circulates through this radiator type thing.
And it has been really heated, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll heat up to, 100, 110 degrees. Then what you're doing is you're circulating this water there. Then when that water gets down, say, to 85 degrees, it's pretty hard to get a lot of heat off of that. So then what happens is I use a heat pump. The water then starts going through a heat pump, which is like a reverse air conditioner.
Yeah.
And just throws the heat from that water into the air again.
So, but that heat pump runs from electricity.
Yes. The heat pump runs from electricity, and then it draws heat from that tank, or it's like air conditioning that water tank, and it'll take it down. I mean, I've seen that the water will take it down 40 degrees. I mean, you can take it clear down there.
But now you're not generating any electricity with your solar system.
No, I am not.
Your main thing is heating your house with that system.
That's right. And so you got to remember that, I mean, this is built in 79. I mean, this is sort of old technology in a way, but, you know, we haven't really improved technology that much. I mean, that's a reasonable price anyway.
This is a... You didn't come up with this. Somebody.
No. This system was a system that was designed. I think it was built in Alabama or someplace. One of the southern states.
Uh huh.
And it was a very expensive system. There was a lot of homemade systems, but this one was made and very. It was a very good system. It's got all copper in it, and I mean it's silicone. It's very well built.
But this guy, somebody came up and put this together for you.
Yes, they put it on the roof, put in the heat exchangers and everything.
Now, of course, the only cost you have is the electricity that your heat pump burns, and I guess to circulate that silicone must be some sort of pump.
Right. Those are very small, what they call Grundfos pumps, and they're like, I don't know, 10th horse pumps. They're very small pumps.
Mm-hmm.
And the silicone doesn't move very fast in that water. You know, it moves pretty slow. They've got pretty good head pressure on them, but they're not fast moving.
Yeah, they'd have to get it back up the other side. Have to get it back up to the. We want it back up to the roof so it can get sun tomorrow.
That's right.
What if you catch? The obvious question is: what if you catch a week of rain, sunshine?
If you catch a week of rain, that's the time that you're probably going to be using that heat pump a little bit. Now, I also have other backups. I also have a wood stove, I don't use a whole lot. Years ago, we used to use it more, but now I'm getting older. I'm getting lazy, I guess. We used to burn maybe a cord of wood all winter, but it's a little Yodel or whatever stove from Norway, cast iron stove, and it's very efficient. It's like, I don't know, 80% or 85%. Fireplaces are only like 15% efficient.
They're very inefficient. I've got
right. So anyway, that's another means of heat that we have.
Yeah.
You know, if my water's getting cold and we say, let's boost it up a little bit, we can light the stove. My total and last resort, which is the most expensive, is total electric heat. I have that also, but I very, very seldom use it.
So it's there just in case.
That's right.
In case Mama said, Lauren, it's cold in the house.
That's right.
Do something, damn it. I'm talking now.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's funny because I've got a wood rack on my front porch absolutely full of beautiful two-year-old wood.
So do
seasoned,
I.
Seasoned, ready, and I built two fires this year. Twice I built a fire in the fireplace.
I think that's about what we did.
I just didn't, you know, I'd think about it. I'd think, I'm going to build a fire in a minute, then it'd be 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I'd think, well, you know, Luann will be home.
But this has been a warm winter.
It was a warm winter here. We had a few cold days. I'm sure you had more than we did.
December, we had some snow and that, but, I mean, then it turned spring again, January, I think, something like that. So. But it's been very warm.
So your heating costs, basically, in a normal winter, like this, you would say this was a little warm winter, are very low. I mean, you...
Oh, yeah.
You've
My highest expenses in the summertime with my air conditioning... I think my highest bill then is about $125, $135, around in that.
Because you have no way to generate. See, what I'd like to do, I'd like to be able to take that sun and turn it into electricity and turn it into something that would run. It looks like I could cool the house with. I mean, because in the sun, in Texas, in summer mornings, the sun comes up at 6 o'clock and stays up till, you know, I got 14 hours of just
that's
blistering
right.
sun.
I think there is ways, probably. I mean, the oil companies don't want to hear about it, though.
No, they don't want to hear about it, and we're an oil country. Boy, we're run by oil men now. It's a complete sellout, and I don't know if we're ever going to get past it. So
the other day on the news, I heard that the guy, I don't remember which, Exxon or one of the big companies, he got a extra pay of $411 million.
Oh yeah, we got a little Exxon stock. They're not all the profits they're making. They're not passing that along to the lowly consumers. I can tell you that. We're good. So you decided at some point in time, because like you said, this was not a cheap thing to do. And in addition to doing the solar things, you had to put in, or you decided to put in. Just in case, force air electric system.
That's right.
If you got in trouble and you wanted to heat the house, doesn't want to be cold. Are you and your wife plant people? I mean, were you going to have a greenhouse anyway?
Mainly just for the heating, but we also thought, this would be neat. We could grow stuff in there. But we really haven't done that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. We just have not become, we've just been too busy doing other things.
Yeah.
We grow stuff outside. We used to grow a lot of stuff outside. And, but the greenhouse, you know, gets pretty hot in the summer, and you just open it up and let the heat go on out outside and that type thing, you know. And, but we just haven't really gotten into growing food and tomatoes, plants and all this. I know a guy in town here. He does it. I mean, he grows tomatoes and everything in his greenhouse. But
yeah,
But I've just never gotten into that. I've just had too many other projects outside.
It'd be the thing to do because it'd be nice and warm in there, and you wouldn't have to. Every year I say I'm going to do a raised garden this year, and this is another year that I haven't done one.
I know it.
I don't know. As you get older, you just things. So you did this, but there's no way. I guess like you said, we've really had very little improvement in this technology since 79 or since
I don't think so. I think photoelectric cells and that type thing, but I'm not sure how this stuff is so expensive. I really haven't looked into it that much. You ought to get someone on who knows a lot about that. I'd love to hear about that.
Well, I'd like to find somebody. Maybe somebody will call that knows a lot about those things. And you're heating, you're right now it's, well, of course you're in the summertime, so summertime, normal summertime, you just have to use a regular force air conditioner like the rest of us do.
Well, actually mine is a water to air heat pump.
Okay.
And instead of using the 1500 gallon tank in my basement.
All right.
I'm using that for cooling. So the heating system is shut down, and then what happens is the air conditioner comes on. And it takes the water over to the heat pump. It is absorbing the heat from the Freon stuff or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever they put in them now.
Right. And then that water goes outside and goes to a miniature cooling tower. And then it runs right back into the tank again. So that my water tower is replacing on a regular air-to-air heat pump. You have the gizmo outside that blows the heat of the fan or
yeah.
the hot coils. Well, mine's a water air conditioner, a water tower is what it is.
So you're circulating chill water through a coil and blowing air across it.
That's right.
Basically. You know, they do a lot of that's done quite often. They do. I've stayed in hotels where I'm sure that's what they did.
Mine is miniature. That's basically what mine is, where you see these buildings and they have cooling towers on top
yeah.
of them. Mine is just a miniature picture
that. Yeah, and that's you say your highest electric bill is 130 something.
Yeah,
yeah.
My average. In fact, my wife we got our electric bill, and my average. They boosted my average to $85 now. And I said, "Well, what? How many kilowatts did we use?" She says, "Well, we actually used less this month than last year, but our bill was more."
Yeah. There's everybody's bill is going to be more this year. Everybody. I don't know if we're going to be able to. How cool we're going to be able to keep things. We may just have to cool off the bedroom. I'm not sure this year. That's going to be after. Of course, I've got two buildings, and I don't like it so cool, but my wife wants it cool when she gets home, so I get it down to 72 or so.
Now, what type of work did you do?
What type of work?
I'm not supposed to ask that question.
Oh, no, you didn't ask any of you. Sure you can ask that question. I did either radio or music all my life. I would if I couldn't find a radio job, well, I'd go play music. Sometimes I did. When my kids were little, I did both. I did radio all day, and then I went and played music at night.
What instrument do you play?
I play guitar and play bass and sing and write songs and I'm just an old hack.
So do you have CDs out? Or
I have CDs out, sir. I do. I have about
really?
Four. Yeah, I'm a old singer songwriter.
Where do I find those?
Well, you at this moment, I guess you can't.
Oh.
But I do have some, and I have plans to. I've got a name domained, and I have plans to put away. You know, this is another thing. This is like growing plants.
Right.
The same kind of thing. I have the names domained, and philpar.com.net, and I plan to put up a website and sell CDs, but haven't done that yet.
Okay.
I need to do that. Yeah, I've got four CDs. I have a nice. Really basically state-of-the-art recording studio, which I'm in now, talking to you on the
okay.
my recording equipment. I have pretty much state-of-the-art. I do everything digital, record on a digital 24-track digital Mackie recorder, and I have a thing called a finalizer, and I have several standalone CD recorders, and I do music for the public also. If somebody has written some songs and wants to put an album together or wants to do a cover album, well, I'll put it together for them. I don't solicit business, and I'm not in the phone book in as a studio, but I'm in the Texas Music Guide, and I get some referrals sometimes from those people. And I just Basically, I don't do a thing. I just fool around. I just play.
Now, is that you playing? That's not you playing on your little commercial things when you the handyman thing and all that. Is that you playing?
That's not me playing. No.
Oh, okay.
That's my voice, but it's not me playing. No, I use library music for all those.
Okay, okay.
And the theme is done by an old group from years. I'll never think of their names. Or Blind Handyman theme that we do. Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant from out on the West Coast.
Okay.
Do that theme. But that's what I did all my life. Is most people, I guess most people are tired of hearing about my life. That's what, you know, actually, I don't do a thing anymore. I just read books till somebody calls.
Well.
That's about it. Well, all right, sir, we're going to let you go and enjoy your greenhouse and enjoy your life. And seems like you've done well. I guess you're married. You got your kids raised. Did you have children? Or?
Yes, married, and we had two girls. One is she's 36, and she's a registered nurse, and the other one lives in Chandler, Arizona, and she worked for Sears.
She works with what?
Sears.
Okay.
Robots.
Yeah.
So.
And still married to the same woman, and that's good?
Still married to the same woman.
Yeah. She put up with all this folly of heating houses with solar,
that's right.
Solar panels, because that was an expensive deal, even in 1979. That was an expensive thing to set up.
That's right.
All right, so we're going to go, and thank you, and I'm going to run this weekend on ACB Radio and several other places. And we thank you. Lauren
Bottmeyer
from Lawrence, Kansas. Thank you, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And words from our heart told only to the wind felt even without
blind science. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
One of the catalog stores, which has become quite famous and does have a presence on the web, is Lands End, www.landsend.com. It's a store primarily for buying clothes for kids or adults, but they do have luggage and some other things. And it's a very accessible website. It's nice because when you do find a particular piece of clothing that you want, they will tell you what the describe the color and the material and so on and so forth, so you can get quite a lot of detail on the site. And if you do need help, there's an 800 number that you can also call if you're stuck for some reason. I would give these Land's End a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. And the website again is www.landsend.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
The stars under a lover's tree that seen through the eyes of my mind. I reach out for the part of me that lives.
We tease kind of about this guy being our, if we can't find a guest, we just call Dan. But then that's, when you think about that, that's pretty good. Your life is multifaceted. You got a lot of things going. You have a good education. You you were a well-adjusted, as far as I'm concerned, blind person.
I like to mix it up, but I don't know if I'm all that interesting. So,
well, we think so, and I think we have a lot of listeners, so obviously they think so because you've been on lots of times. The main thing. Oh, by the way, I meant to mention this immigration thing. You've been watching that the Senate is debating. I think they've agreed to let blind people stay.
Well, that's a good plan.
Which is encouraging.
Yes.
I think it's nice. You found you were about to. Dan is a single man about to embark in his first marriage, and the lady Teresa that you met through a service on the internet that's not for blind people. It's just for single people. It's called eHarmony. Is that right?
Yes, eHarmony.com. And as far as I'm concerned, it works pretty well.
Well, obviously so. You found a lady that you think you want to spend the rest of your life with, or you're sure you want to spend the rest of your life with. And I'd say that's good. But that's not the first one you tried.
No, I tried Match.com several years ago, and also was pretty successful with that. I met a woman who I ended up dating for a year and a half, and we hit it off very well.
Yeah, I'd say that was successful. A year and a half, you just decided this isn't where I need to be, and she isn't what I think I want.
Actually, it was more like she decided it wasn't what she wanted. I mean, I had asked her to marry me, and she didn't want to go that route.
Well, and besides that, and this was the lady that lived a good way out of town.
Some of the major issues were that she lived 40 miles away from me, and we just had a lot of trouble getting to see each other. We would see each other most weekends, but still, it was just a pain for me to get out there, for her to come and pick me up, to go out there. And she had three little kids, and she wasn't about to move closer to the city. And so I think all of that just added up to it was probably the smarter idea for us probably not to hook up.
But you're not angry. I mean, she's as far as you're concerned, a nice lady.
She is. I love her to death. I think she's terrific. And there's no really no hard feelings between us.
We remain
friends. We've been broken up for quite a while, but we remain friends to this day.
Okay, so you tried that, and then you tried Match.com, and then you thought you'd try this eHarmony thing, which, as my understanding, the questionnaire is quite involved, quite lengthy and detailed.
It is. It really looks kind of like a full psychological profile kind of thing, and it's quite intimidating. It took me months to go through it because I'd pick it up and I would answer 40, 50 questions, and then I'd get frustrated and I'd stop for a couple of weeks, and then I'd pick it up again and answer a bunch more questions. I don't remember. It's several hundred questions, and it wasn't 100% accessible, but it really wasn't that bad.
What do you think they do with those? Do they feed those in a computer and let the computer make some sort of a decision or something?
Yeah, according to them, they try to match up profiles. I guess they break after you answer all these questions, they break you down into one of several number of groups, and then they pull people from that same profile or a similar profile or a compatible profile, I guess. And then they do a lot of work to anonymize everything. So you'll get an email that introduces you to a new person. This is Teresa, and then Teresa, this is Dan, and you can go online and you can kind of view some basic information about that person.
All right.
And then you can choose to, close communications with them or start communications.
Yeah.
And then you basically send them a list of canned questions. You select from a list of questions, and they send them to her, and then she answers them, and they send them back to you, and then she asks you questions. And then after about two or three rounds of this anonymous type stuff, then you're allowed to share email addresses if you want, and you can contact each other directly.
But nowhere in this list of questions was there, do you have full physical function of all your, can you walk, can you talk,
right.
can you
no,
see?
No, there's none of that is actually specced out in there, and it's up to you. You fill out a profile as well as answering all these questions. It's not based just solely on the questions.
Yeah.
You do have to fill out a profile about yourself, and you can choose whether or not to say anything you want within the profile. And I personally chose to be upfront with my blindness.
Yeah.
And I think that probably did scare a lot of women off, because I did get a number of contacts that closed communications before I even got to look at their profile.
Yeah, but if it would scare them off then they need to be scared away then. They need to be, if they're afraid of a blind person, they need to go then.
That's my feeling. I mean, there are probably some of that group who, if you were to make contact with, they might eventually, you know, realize that it's not what they thought, and they could overcome it. But to be honest, I'd rather, you know, hook up with someone who was a little more open-minded and isn't going to write me off day one, you know.
Yeah, I want him to know.
Yeah. I mean, that argument goes around many times in the work industry and you know, in dating, and you know, how upfront. I've always been pretty upfront about it. And I've always been of the mind that if they're going to write me off day one, they're going to be too much trouble to convince otherwise.
Especially I might want them to write me off because I was bald or, you know,
right,
because of some look that I had. But write me off because I'm blind, I want them to do that now.
Yeah.
I don't want to fool, you know, if that bothers them, I don't need them.
Yeah, that's been my attitude. And it seems some of the people I've talked to who've been successful at it have said the same thing. There's another guy on the Blind Like Me list, Sean Keane, who went through eHarmony as well, and he was upfront about it as well, and he's been successful. So,
I didn't realize that. Has he found a life partner?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he's married, and will be having a kid.
Wow, that's good. Well, Sean's in Texas, isn't he? He's in Dallas or something.
Yeah, I think he's...
Yeah, I haven't had him on yet. I probably need to contact him. So, but both but Teresa knew to begin with, when she, the first time she laid eyes on, met, shook hands, touched physically, was around you, she knew you couldn't see.
Yeah, she knew from day one, and it didn't seem to bother her in any way, and you know, she had some questions, and we had our first dinner, and we talked through it all, she was pretty much open-minded. She really didn't, I mean, she didn't have a million questions. She basically took me at face value. I'll relate an amusing story from the Match.com connection I had with my girlfriend, Beth. She told me that she had three kids, and then, I don't think it was in her profile, and I hadn't published my profile, so I had contacted her first. And she told me she had three kids and hoped that didn't scare me off. And then I told her I was blind and hoped that didn't scare her off. But she thought I was joking. and she sent back an email that was, you know, really, really quite harsh if I had accepted it at face value. But and then when I told her, no, I'm not joking, I'm actually blind, she was pretty embarrassed. But that was her personality. She was.
Yeah, so I guess having three kids would be what I want to say is almost as bad as, or maybe worse than, you know, being,
it'd scare a lot of people off.
Whoa, it would scare a lot of people off. Being blind would scare a lot of people off.
It would.
But and I can understand. You know, I remember telling people, I'll sure be glad when the most important thing for you about me is not the fact that I'm blind. Get over it.
Right.
I deal with it. You know.
Yeah, and that's the way, you know, that's the kind of person I want to be with, is someone who doesn't harp on the fact that I'm blind or overcompensate.
I'm sure with Teresa there have been some, how'd you know that, moments. How'd you do that, moments?
Yeah, oh yeah. I think she, it's a learning process for anybody.
Yeah, for anybody.
People just don't know, people who have not been around a blind person just don't know what to expect and what is capable and what isn't. But, you know, the first time, Teresa, last summer when we went to go skydiving, and everybody on the drop zone knew me, and I was obviously very comfortable there. I think she was probably a little more surprised because she knew I was a skydiver, but I don't think she really, really understood that was who I was, and that it was something, you know, not out of the ordinary for me.
Well, and then there are differently abled blind people. There are some blind people who can walk around and do fine, and then there's some people who can't get up out of a chair and go get a drink of water without falling over something.
It's true, but that's no different than any other population, right? There are always people who do fine and people who have trouble, you know, and that's blind or sighted or any community.
You would recommend eHarmony or Match.com, either one?
I really would. I find Match is a little easier to navigate, but you'll probably get a lot more feedback, a lot more hits, because it's not so directed and it's a little cheaper than eHarmony, but eHarmony seems to give more qualified hits, so you're going to get people who are a little more closely aligned to your personality.
And when we recommend telling them up front, putting that in your profile, that you're blind.
I do. I mean, that's my personal...
Mine also. All right. Well, let me just wish you and Teresa the best of luck. I'm sorry you're not coming in November, but I understand very good, and y'all have fun on your honeymoon. And
Thanks.
That's good. Maybe next time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully. Daniel, thank you, sir. I appreciate your help.
You bet.
I'll talk with you.
Bye.
We neglected to give you that fellow's name. That is Dan Rossi from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who works at Carnegie Mellon University, is in charge of one of the computer departments up there, does some, I think, training, actually, of students. And as I understand, they're working on something with this with your phone so that the camera in your phone could be maybe used as a barcode reader or could go to the database, that great database in the sky, and look up barcodes for you. That isn't all clear to me, but they're working on that, and as sure as soon as there's something comes of that, we'll get a hold of Dan again and have him on as a guest. Like I, you know, it's just we always say if we run for guest call, Dan, his life is good. He's made it that way. Dan is as a mountain climber, skydiver. And is fixing to get married, and like as I said, works on all sorts of things. So, well-adjusted blind person. Thanks, Dan Rossi. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. Glad I met you. Never would have known you had we not started doing this show. You know? Let me remind you about our November gathering, November 3rd, Friday, November 4th, Saturday, November 5th is a Sunday, and we go home Monday morning, November 6th. We're going to play a lot of music. We're going to do Blind Handyman Show. We're going to do Cooking in the Dark Show. We're going to spend a lot of time talking. Hopefully, we're going to work out something to play some trivia games. Hopefully, maybe name that tune or haven't quite got all that worked out. Demonstrations of blindness related of different items that you may be thinking about buying that are talking things that maybe you don't have that other people bring. We'll do all that. And none of those motivational speakers to make you feel like a jerk because you aren't out recruiting. Folks, we're just going to have a good time. We did this 2 years ago, and I think everybody who came, with the exception of a couple of people, everybody that came is coming back, and that means something to me. If you want information about it, you can write me, phil@philpar.net, or philpar@consolidated.net, or you can call me, 936-634-9500. I'll need an email address to send you the information. I have something written up on it, and be happy to send you the information, okay? phil@philpar.net or philpar@consolidated.net or 936-634-9500. Thank you for listening to Blind Like Me. If you'd like to be a guest, the same thing applies. Get a hold of me and let me know. Thank you. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.